Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
let him play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Welcome to the return of Steelcast from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. I'm your host, Christopher Carter, and with me as always, my esteemed colleague, Danny Bostic. Danny, how you doing today?
I'm feeling kind of marginalized because it's not afternoon here yet, and since we have listeners and BTSC interactors all over the world and all over the country, I'd just like to point out it might be night somewhere. It's definitely still morning here in Colorado Springs. I just want to set that straight before we continue.
Well, you know, we got that East Coast bias for the Illuminati and everything, so we setting everything up, and, you know, I bow to the Illuminati all the time.
Actually, I'm just jealous you're on the East Coast. Can't wait to get back there.
I can't wait to have you back here. Ladies and gentlemen, we're bringing back Steelcast. We apologize for not being out. We've had some technical difficulties on my end, which has limited my ability to fully host and everything with stuff. But we're glad to be back. The standard took a week. We took a week off with Jeff and Lance. So we're going to be picking up this week. I got my laptop back, so we're all in full gear, ready to go, talking Steelers, talking NFL. If at any point in time that you want to talk on this show, please call in, and we will bring you on air as soon as possible. The number is 347-850-8581. This show, we got a lot to talk about. The Steelers are on their bye week. It's week 11. The NFL is changing every week with who's on top and who's not. And right now, it's the Steelers who are coming off that back-to-back wins at home, going into the bye week, sitting at 6-4 and looking pretty good. Now, Danny, they beat the Raiders and the Browns, both in impressive ways. But to you, what stood out? Because you looked at in both games, they scored at least 30 points, and the defense gave up points against Oakland, but caused a lot of turnovers and even blocked a punt. While in Cleveland, they just shut everything down. What stood out to you most? Like, was there a player or a concept or something that happened that you were just like, wow, this team is improving?
I think I've got to say adaptability, because Haley has not had a consistent set of players between Bell's suspension and then later on Bell's injury. We had Martavis Bryant's suspension. We saw D'Angelo Williams come out strong when Bell was gone and then basically not see a lot of playing time until Bell was injured again. So there's just been a complete lack of consistency in terms of personnel, and I've just been really impressed. I know a lot of people hate Haley, let's fire Haley, but I really am impressed with the way the offense has kind of banded together and come up with an identity independent of the different personnel sets that are able to be on the field.
I hear that. The offense, it seems to never be able to be what you think it's going to be the next week that it's in. One week, you're missing Martavis Bryant and Le'Veon Bell. The next week, Ben Roethlisberger goes down. The next week, you know, Le'Veon Bell goes down. Michael Vick goes out. You know, everything they've had to deal with every week. And literally, we went from Ben coming back in the Bengals game to Ben being injured in the Raiders game to then being possibly out for the season, then out for 1 to 2 weeks, then playing against the Raiders. Against the Browns, after he got injured against the Raiders. It's been crazy. It's been mind-boggling. but the team has held together. They're still putting up over. They put 30-point games back to back, and they're still competing. And I think the defense also needs some recognition. We're going to be talking about them in this rundown. But certainly, the past two games especially, I think, are a big sign for the team because they had a lot of obstacles. Anytime you have to put a fourth-string quarterback on the field, you know that your team has just had a rough season. But they're weathering the storm, aren't they, Danny? I mean, if you would have told me Landry Jones was playing this season, I would have said you're crazy. If you would have told me that Landry Jones got hurt and we had to go back to Ben Roethlisberger, no one would have bet those odds. I mean, to me, that I don't know about you, Danny. What does that say about the entire, not just Todd Haley, but the whole next man up thing that Tomlin has preached for years? Is it the truth? Do you think the team has bought into it? Or is it just, hey, we got a bunch of good players now, and they're playing together?
I think it's next man up, and I think they learned a lesson last season after Bell got hurt because people are like, oh, the Steelers aren't the Steelers without Le'Veon Bell. And guess what? We don't have Bell right now. We don't have Kelvin Beachum right now. We don't have Maurkice Pouncey right now. There's so many players that are either out for the season or hurt on a relatively frequent basis that it's amazing that they're able to kind of continue to win, continue to play well, despite these injuries and suspensions and everything else that's kind of come about. So I think they've figured out a formula here to be able to keep the team's identity even as they're going through these different personnel shifts.
Indeed, indeed. And that's the thing. When you're a team and you're trying to be a really good team, you have to establish an identity. Everyone always talked about, you know, in the 90s, the Steelers were the ground and pound you team. You know, when the Steelers had super defenses, that was their identity with the Patriots, with their West Coast style offense, though some people say it's not West Coast because there's a lot more to it. But, you know, with the way that they play, when Peyton Manning was in his prime, every team has those identities. And this team seems to find many identities, to be honest. I mean, the way that Ben Roethlisberger's taken off some games and then the way that the defense has had to put the team on its back and carry them through the rough times, there's something serious. This might be a magical season, whether it ends up as a Super Bowl or not. This is a crazy run that they're on of playing through insane injuries. I mean, the big wins like the Cardinals and the Chargers, and really, I mean, even the Raiders game after losing Bell for the season, you know, going up against an offense that was supercharged and, you know, having to adjust to not having Bell, and then even losing Ben Roethlisberger in the fourth quarter. You know, there's just so many things that this team deals with and seems to rise above. But that's what great teams do. You know, so we'll be keeping an eye on hopefully no more injuries, but how the Steelers continue to deal with this season. But Danny, you know, the Steelers, everyone's been saying fifth seed. We just got to get the fifth seed in the playoffs so that we can focus on playing the winner of the AFC South and blah 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 blah. But there was a game this Monday night that happened. What happened? You know, did the Bengals play the Texans? Give us a rundown of how you saw the Texans beating down on these Bengals.
Well, how I saw it was I thought I couldn't believe my eyes, honestly. I was stranded in the town of Grand Junction because we had a blizzard out here in the wild west of Colorado, and I joined into the game a little bit late, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing because that was not a game I thought the Bengals were at risk of losing. And my main hope, it's not necessarily a hope, but just in terms of implications in the AFC North, is we know that it is part, speaking of team identity, it's part of the Bengals' team identity to choke and lose when it matters. So I don't care if they went 8-0. I don't care if they ended up, you know, with a perfect season. We know at some point it's part of who they are to fall apart. So I did think it was interesting that that happened against the Texans. And it was almost like they sabotaged their chances of winning. I mean, they really snatched defeat from the jaws of victory when A.J. Green, whom Jeremy Fowler predicted to be the AFC North MVP, which still irks me, Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, in any case, when he dropped that pass towards the end of the game, I mean, that was classic Bengals. Just classic, unable to pull through, unable to execute. In that moment, it didn't matter that they'd won every other game that season. They looked like themselves, and that wasn't a positive thing. What was your take on that game?
Well, you know what? A lot of people have made a lot of noise about Andy Dalton and primetime football and how we've seen him fold under pressure. And I think, you know, I've always said that it's not just that it's primetime football. It's not like the night the lights go on and he just gets, you know, a little unsettled. But I think there is a test to his mettle as a player. He, as a player, you've seen him. He can be good and decent, and sometimes even in great in small moments in games that are, you know, they're not in the prime time. They're not the pressure isn't all on the team. But the knock on the Bengals for decades now has been, can you win a playoff game? And since Andy Dalton's been there, they've been to the playoffs what, three times and won none of them. And now you're dealing with a situation where you're having to go up against the Texans, a team that you definitely should beat. You're undefeated. Everyone's talking about this could be your year. And what happens? You completely lay an egg. And then not only that, but after that, you saw the J.J. Watt comments, right? Like the whole, you know, Red Ryder BB gun. First of all, that ain't even original. I called him the Red Ryder BB gun. I'm pretty sure you called him the Red Ryder BB gun. Anyone that knows that Andy Dalton's name is the Red Rifle and has seen Christmas Story, which would probably be every red-blooded American that watches football, knows that joke can be made. And Andy Dalton got mad at it? To me, it shows that this is a reason why this guy does not get it done in the clutch, let alone in just the primetime game. Just don't lose the game. And he looked bad against the Texans. So, to me, it's more of the Bengals bungling of what we know. Danny, does this mean to me? I didn't put the division race out of the discussion for us, but I did think that the Steelers don't worry about the division. I thought that they just needed to worry about winning each game one at a time, as any team should. But realistically, as a fan, do you think that the Bengals could be bungling and that the Steelers have a decent shot to win the AFC North?
I think so. I mean, I think it's a long shot, but I think it's absolutely possible. I mean, the Steelers themselves have kind of choked towards the second half of the season in different years, losing many consecutive games, and that's certainly more part of the Bengals' identity than the Steelers' identity. So I think anything can happen. I mean, I'm going to probably check out this weekend for a weekend article, just, you know, when teams start 6-0, 7-0, 8-0. What's their final record? How far do they go? So I'm thinking the division is open, although we obviously need help. The Bengals are going to have to sabotage themselves in the same way they sabotaged themselves against the Texans. But, the Steelers need to stay the course, obviously have great shot at making the postseason. But, you know, there's just a lot of ridiculous things happening right now in the NFL. There's so many teams with losing records or non-winning records, either you know, 50-50 on wins and losses or actual losing records that, the playoff picture is just going to be extraordinarily weird, especially coming out of the AFC South. So what happens in the AFC North, it's pretty clear that the Browns and Ravens are completely out of the picture, but I do think that there could be a battle brewing between the Bengals and the Steelers.
No, I think that too. Now, the Bengals have what, seven games left in their season? When I look at their schedule, you see the Cardinals, Rams, Browns, Steelers, Niners, Broncos, Ravens. Now, the Steelers, they cannot, if they're going to win the division, they cannot tie the Bengals. It would be a lot to ask, because if they tie the Bengals, that means ultimately they had to beat the Bengals to catch them. And it means that if, when I say they can't tie it, they can't afford to tie them if they really want to take the division, if that's something that can happen. Because the Bengals – the Bengals will probably have a better conference record, especially because they face several NFC opponents in these last few games. So if they lose to the NFC team, their conference and division records won't take as much of a hit as the Steelers have, who've lost to the Ravens and the Bengals so far. Now I'm going to name four games. I'm just going to give you a quick shot prediction. No scores, no explanation. Just say, do you think the Bengals will win, or do you think the other team will win? You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, cool. This weekend, prime time at the Cardinals.
Cardinals are going to win.
The week after that, they'll play the Rams at home.
Oh, Rams are going to win. I do believe that. I mean, the Rams are one of the best teams that just can't manage to win. I mean, they really have a lot of different strengths that they can't seem to coordinate all in the same week to bring their whole team in any one given week, but I do think their front seven is still an incredible threat. They're doing great things on the ground with their running back, so I'm actually going to go with the Rams on that one.
Okay, and then host the Bengals at home against the Steelers.
Steelers.
And then the last, hey, good, and then the last game at the Denver Broncos.
It just depends on Osweiler, but the Denver Broncos defense is extraordinarily good, and they struggled against J.J. Watt and the Houston Texans defense. So I think for that reason the Rams and the Broncos are going to be difficult, not so much because of what's going on the offense, but because I think both teams' defenses are capable of making the difference and winning the game, which means the Bengals would lose.
All right. So those are the four key games that I see that the Bengals have. I think that they'll beat the Ravens, and I think they'll beat the Rams. Not that they can't lose to these teams, because we've seen them bungle before. And the Ravens are just that classic team right now of they just can't get anything right. They can't get right. It's insane the way they lost to the Jaguars last week. But those are the four games. If the Bengals lose those four games and the Steelers run the table in winning out, we'll get to their schedule in a little bit. That would give the Steelers a one-game lead over the Bengals, and they wouldn't have to worry about division tiebreakers or conference tiebreakers. They would outright win the division. So, if you're listening out there, keep an eye. Look at their schedule. Take a look for yourself, and just sit there like, okay, this is doable. It's not impossible. But the Steelers, as players and coaches, they can't worry about that. What they got to worry about is, we need to beat Seattle in Seattle at 4 o'clock next weekend after Thanksgiving. So that's my look there. But speaking of the Steelers' schedule, we're going to go over when people looked at their schedule at the beginning of the season. I think you even talked about this in an article, Danny. The end of the season looked killer. It looked like it was just going to be a run of seriously hard games that the Steelers were going to be lucky to survive. They were playing the NFC champion Seattle Seahawks, who had won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. The Indianapolis Colts with Andrew Luck, who were in the AFC championship game last year. The Denver Broncos, whose defense was destroying everyone, and they were on a 7-0 streak not too long ago. The Cincinnati Bengals, who were just 8-0 before last night. But now, all of a sudden, those teams, and don't forget the Ravens, who also were supposed to be really good this season. But now you're looking at, at a run of teams that have been, I wouldn't say declawed, but they look a lot different. And I think you wrote about this maybe like 2 weeks ago, right, Danny? You wrote an article talking about how the strength of schedule for the Steelers has changed. What do you see with these different matchups?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's how tough has a Pittsburgh Steelers schedule really been? Because if you look at power rankings and just different metrics for when the schedule came out, it was the most difficult schedule in the league by far. But if you see how these teams are actually performing, the Chiefs have kind of rebounded. They had an unlucky run of things at the beginning of the season. They won their first game, went on to lose game after game after game after game, but then were able to come back and beat the Steelers, which started a winning trend for the Chiefs. We beat the Cardinals. That should have been a challenging game. Lost to the Ravens, which is astounding, just because they are under Mark Trestman. Their offense is flailing and struggling. But, yes, I mean, the Ravens are very, very beatable. So looking ahead, I thought even after the bye week, going out to Seattle and playing the Seahawks was going to be one of the biggest challenges of the year. And I definitely, preseason, did not think the Steelers would be able to pull off a victory there. I thought that would be the most unlikely victory of their season. But now I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, the Seahawks, they're just not doing it this year. Look at the Colts. Didn't consider them a huge threat, but they're even less of a threat now. They're playing horribly. The Bengals, I do believe, will go to Cincinnati and beat them. The Broncos, they have a terrifying defense, but hopefully by the 20th, Ben will be at 100%. And the offensive line, I mean, week to week to week, Villanueva is getting more experience and more coaching. So I think that we have definite hope to beat the Broncos. December 27th, we have the Ravens in Baltimore, and I don't think we're going to make the same mistake twice and lose to the patheticness that are the Charm City Air Rats twice in the same season. And we close out our season with the Browns. And and they're beatable, and we'll do what we did last time. I think Manziel has a potential to be a good quarterback in a crappy organization, but yards on the field doesn't matter. It's the final score, and we held them to a few points last game, and we'll do it again on the third. So suddenly, the Steelers' schedule is not looking too daunting. It's looking completely manageable.
Right. And something that someone said 2 weeks ago, not a reporter, a player on the Steelers, by the name of Antoine Blake, who a lot of people wrote, including myself, he came out and said after the Steelers lost to the Bengals, they dropped a 4-4, Le'Veon Bell was out for the season, you know, doom and gloom was everywhere. But he said he doesn't see any reason why the team can't win out, meaning win 8 straight games, and be 12-4 by the season's end. Now, everyone laughed at him. People were like, man, this guy's crazy. Who is this guy? He's not even the best corner on this team. He's not even the best player on this team. Now, get out of here. But now they've won 2 in a row. They're headed to the bye week. Ben Roethlisberger, despite being hurt, looks to be playing at a high level. D'Angelo Williams seems to be providing an answer in the backfield, and the defense is improving all the time. They're making more fundamental plays, causing more turnovers. The Steelers have a chance to make this man a prophet. Do you think he was completely talking out his rear end, or do you think he saw the real potential of this team and was like, man, no, we can beat anyone we face?
Oh, I think he's a literal prophet, because I remember offseason, you know, back when we were scrambling to come up with offseason content, preseason content. Everybody's like, oh man, there's no new content. I'm like, duh, there's no football news. But Blake, Antoine Blake, always had entertaining statements. He's a great self-promoter, but he said he was rising up out of the ashes like a phoenix, and he really, really has. So I'm beginning to wonder if, like the oracles and prophets of old, if he has some sort of special innate future-telling capability. Instead of just it being propaganda and self-promotion, does he actually know what's going to happen? And I'm going to say yes. I'm saying the man has seen the future. And man. I think he has. I mean, it's not like he's right. He knows. He's got special powers.
Seems like it. And I don't know if, all jokes aside about being a prophet, I said, because I was talking about this with some friends on Facebook, there was, people were like, man, this guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And I said, you know, is it a long stretch to say that they will go 8-0 in the last 8 games? Yes, because, you know, it's tough to say any team will go 8-0 in 8 games. But at the same time, I do think this team has the potential to do it, and I think he sees it too, because he works there every day. The offense is still putting up crazy numbers. They still have the best receiver in all of football. They still have Ben Roethlisberger behind, quarterback, as long as he doesn't get hurt again. They still have Martavis Bryant. The offensive line's really coming together. They could get Marquise Pouncey back, and their defense is bringing the heat on people. There's so many good things to smile about this team, and this is in the midst of a crazy storm of an NFL season that has them losing key player after key player. We're not talking about losing Jason World. We're talking about losing Marquise Pouncey, Le'Veon Bell, Kelvin, all these players. And don't forget, we had to go stretchers without Stephon Tuitt, who's been a superstar role player for the Steelers this season. We had to go without Ryan Shazier for like 5 games. You know, there's been several injuries. Will Allen too. There's been several injuries that have caused serious problems, and I think that's a testament to just who the Steelers are right now and why Antoine Blake was comfortable saying, I think we can win out and go 12-4. So, you know, being that, you know, I think that changes a lot of things in the NFL. But speaking of changes in the NFL, Danny, there's a lot of things, because we talked about the Steelers at the end of the schedule and how teams are looking. But across the NFL, across the board, it just seems like everyone, the landscape has just been shifting, like climate change, global warming divisions. You know, it's been crazy. What are the teams that you're looking at that have changed how everything looks in the playoff chases, both in the AFC and the NFC?
The Kansas City Chiefs have turned their season around. They are looking good, and they've also proven, just like the Steelers have, that they can operate without their star running back because Jamaal Charles has been sidelined. And now they have Sharkhandrick West coming in and performing amazingly well. So I think the Chiefs are a team that were written off early in the season based on their multiple consecutive losses and are now really making a run for it in the AFC West. In the NFC, I remember the first mock draft I did, I had the Bears picking a quarterback in first overall pick, and suddenly the Bears aren't looking all that bad. By the same token, the Packers just lost to the Lions. So, you know, that's – and you have the Vikings looking amazing. I mean, they were kind of a sleeper after losing to the 49ers. I just wasn't paying much attention to them, and suddenly, I'm looking, and I'm like, wow, they're actually one of the best teams in the NFL. So it's definitely been a surprising season, and I think even some of the undefeated teams, like the Bengals, could end up having a mediocre season when all is said and done.
I agree with that. There's definitely some teams that could look different. But, you know, the question with the Packers, they've now lost three in a row. A few weeks ago, they were 6-0. They were unstoppable. Who's going to beat Aaron Rodgers? Is he going to play Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? Yada, yada, yada. Now they've lost, and they were tough games, but they've lost these games. And Aaron Rodgers, now it comes out, his shoulder might be injured and all this other stuff. And the Vikings have surpassed them, at least for now. They're 7-2, the Packers are 6-3 in the division, and I think they play this week. Are the Vikings really a better team than the Packers, though, Danny? Because their defense is hot. Teddy Bridgewater's young and learning. He got some weapons on offense, namely Adrian Peterson. And now Aaron Rodgers is like, man, I need some help out here. The defense ain't getting it done all the time. And, you know, without Jordy Nelson, I'm relying on Randall Cobb and Devontae Adams and Ty Montgomery and James Jones. I need some help out here. Do you think that as of now, with the injuries that the Packers have sustained, because Eddie Lacy's also been out, are the Vikings a better team right now than the Packers?
Yeah, I'm going to say they are. And they were flying under my radar. I didn't notice. I didn't care. It was one of those teams I'm like, okay, I know they're in the NFL, but beyond that, I didn't really pay much attention because they're in a different conference and who cares, right? But I did read a rather lengthy article on the Daily Norseman. That's the SB Nation Minnesota Vikings community. I read a really good article. It was very long. I started getting tired during the article, but it was very engaging. It was about Teddy Bridgewater. And the author of the article made a really, really convincing argument for Teddy Bridgewater as one of the up-and-coming, almost elite-level quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think he has been underrated. And I also think, you know, they're just the Vikings don't get as much press as the Packers. You got Aaron Rodgers with Olivia Munn. That generates attention. You had Jones coming back. I mean, you know, the Packers are a very, very popular team. They have one of the best fan bases in the entire NFL. So, you know, it's interesting because I think the Vikings are a bit of a sleeper, but I definitely have to say at this point, especially with the Packers' recent track record, that the Vikings are the better team.
And you know what, I agree with you. I have been a person that's been looking at Teddy Bridgewater since he was in college. When he was under Charlie Strong at Louisville, he was lighting it up. He beat the Gators in the, I think it wasn't the Rose Bowl. I think it was the Sugar Bowl. But he lit it up. And over the season, I was like, that's a guy I think I want. And, you know, I was hoping that no one else would really pay attention to him and that maybe the Steelers could grab him in like the third or fourth round. And then he could be the backup quarterback for Ben Roethlisberger, and maybe even someday his successor. But people are starting to see that Teddy Bridgewater, is he elite right now? No, but he's improving. He's making reads. He's making really good throws, and he's playing within his system. He's much like Ben Roethlisberger in his young days with the Steelers. He has a good defense around him. The Vikings front seven brings heat. It stops the run. They have good players in the secondary. They have smothered some teams, and I think that's what Aaron Rodgers is going up against this week, and I think that's why the Vikings are going to win. And then at the same time, you know, he's working with an offense that, you know, they have Adrian Peterson, you know, one of the best running backs in this generation of running backs. He's a complete monster. But his receivers, I mean, Stephen Diggs, Mike Wallace, Kyle Rudolph, a tight end, you know, Cordero Patterson, These aren't superstar names right here. These are guys that are like, you know, they're solid role players, but they're not they're not the names like Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, you know, or like Julio Jones or something. He doesn't have a guy like that to throw to, but he's still making the play. You know, I like Teddy Bridgewater. I think that the Vikings are on the move, and I think that that's going to be a major shift in how people look at the NFC. So look out, everybody. Minnesota Vikings, I'm saying, are for real. But, you know, you were talking about the Chiefs earlier. Now, the Chiefs, they're tied now with the Oakland Raiders at 4-5. And people were hyping the Oakland Raiders, especially when they almost beat the Steelers, and Derek Carr was throwing for a lot of touchdown passes every week. But they just lost to the Vikings. Now they're sitting at 4-5 with the Kansas City Chiefs. Both are looking up at the 7-2 Broncos. Do either of those teams then catch the Denver Broncos by season's end?
I think so. I mean, the Broncos' offense has struggled, and I don't know if Osweiler's going to come in and be like, you know, the next Tom Brady. That's the thing with the backups. You never know. There's always hope, but I think generally they don't pan out. But I thought the Broncos, as a whole, were overrated. Week to week, I was surprised that they were still undefeated until they lost. But I think just they can't win games based on their defense alone. And I think Vernon Davis could make a difference. I thought that was a pretty savvy acquisition on their part, but I don't think they're in it for the long haul. I think that they're vulnerable. The Chiefs are coming up strong. The Cardinals are a very solid squad. So, and, you know, the Raiders, they're not bad this year. So I think the Broncos are vulnerable.
I do think the Broncos are vulnerable. Thank you, Chris. I think that they can definitely be taken. But the problem is, the only thing I have a problem seeing with this is, can the Chiefs or the Raiders be consistent enough? Yes, the Chiefs have turned it around the past few games. And when they beat the Steelers, don't forget, they beat the Steelers with Landry Jones. You know, they beat the Steelers that were struggling on multiple levels. They did look impressive. Alex Smith didn't turn the ball over a whole lot. He didn't make the crucial mistakes that lost them the game. And that's really who Alex Smith is. But when they start to get in these big games, can they keep doing that? Sharkhandrick West has been a weapon, and I've been using him in FanDuel to get me some money lately. The question is, can they keep doing it? You know, you can surprise a few teams with it, but now that people are starting to see them, you know, they got to go up against the Raiders again. They got to go up against the Broncos. They're going to have to play against some other teams. And the same good thing goes for the Raiders. You know, Derek Carr looks impressive. He has Amari Cooper. He's putting up good numbers. Andre Holmes is a problem. Michael Crabtree is a problem. Even Latavius Murray. They have like a good series of weapons, and their defense has Khalil Mack, and they're a little lacking on you know, outside of him. But you know, with Charles Woodson being probably their best player on the defense. But, you know, they still have to prove it. You know, through all the good times that people want to feel about the Raiders, they're still a losing record right now. And, you know, that puts them, what, 2.5 games, three games behind the Broncos right now? That's a lot of distance to make up. But we'll see. I don't think that they'll catch the Broncos. I think that they'll make it respectable. I think that it'll be a tight race to come down to, like, the last 2 weeks. But I do think the Broncos end up pulling out with a win. On the division, and they just won't go far in the playoffs. But yeah, so that's that. And then we're going to get back to one of your favorite topics, Danny, because you called on our show throughout the early parts of the season, you called for the defeat of the New England Patriots on multiple accounts. I think you said that the Jaguars are going to beat them, and I think you said that there was one other team that you said was going to beat them, and neither instance happened. They're still undefeated. And not that you shouldn't, you know, try to pick at when you think that this undefeated team will fall, because I think they will. But do you think that they could actually go 16-0 and then possibly even 19-0 in this season? And if you don't, who's got taken them?
I'm not sure I'm a reliable source on this. I did think the Jaguars would beat them. I was sure. I didn't think. I knew the Dolphins would beat them, and they didn't. I'm not sure what I have to say is of any value, but, you know, looking ahead at their schedule, they have the Bills, the Broncos, the Eagles, the Texans, the Titans, the Jets, and the Dolphins, and they should be able to beat those teams easily. I'm going to go out on a limb and go with the Texans just because they beat the Bengals. And I think J.J. Watt is a phenomenal player. I think he'll come up with some clever, underhanded insult of Tom Brady that's actually completely non-offensive, but there's going to be some drama there like there was with Dalton. I'm going to go with the Texans beating the New England Patriots, but every week I didn't think the Cowboys would beat the Patriots. Mm-mm. I thought the Jaguars would beat them. I thought the Jets would beat them. I thought the Dolphins would beat them. I thought the Redskins would beat them. I call them bold predictions on Twitter, and I'm generally wrong. So I hate to say it. I think it's possible they'll go undefeated. I'd like to see them lose in the first round of the playoffs, but, I mean, I believe that's unlikely too. But of all the teams on there, I'm going to have to go with the Giant Killers, the Texans. It's going to be a David and Goliath-type situation, and the Texans are going to come out on top in Houston.
That's interesting. That's it. I think that the Patriots, they've been a team that's risen above several issues. But on MSN.com, they released an interesting article, I think it was yesterday, that said that the only team that can possibly derail the Patriots is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think that's an interesting notion. I also think that the Patriots, for all the they're 9-0 and they've earned their 9-0. And I'm not saying that they don't deserve to be called the best in the NFL right now. But I am saying that I think that people are just riding them a little too much. ESPN, they always love them because they call Tom Brady a saint. They call Bill Belichick the greatest coach of all time, which I think is ridiculous. You're looking at a team that they've won games. But their games aren't all blowouts. They barely beat the Steelers by one possession. They beat the Bills by one possession because Tyrod Taylor threw a pass that his receiver didn't go for and he got tipped, and that prevented them from tying the game. The Jets were one possession away. These are not games that they just ran away with. These are games that the team hung in and fought for and were able to win. And then even this Giants game that just happened. I was watching the game. I was like, man, if Tom Coughlin blows this, they're going to be riding him all week. And, I really do think that was, as much as people get on for Mike Tomlin for blowing play calling situations, I was sitting there like, why would you pass three times in the red zone when you know that you got to take clock off of Brady and before you take this lead? So that if you do get a field goal, you give him under a minute, well under a minute, with no timeout to work with, or you can at least try to get the touchdown on the ground. But they didn't do any of that. They gave him time. They got the field goal, and then of course they came back. They marched down the field and got and kicked the field goal to win the game. So many things about that. I'm just like, the Patriots are not unbeatable. Some people really think that they are. I think that it could be either the Bills or the Jets that end up stopping them from going 16-0 in the regular season. But whether they do or don't, I think that this team is primed to be upset at Gillette Stadium in the playoffs. Whether it be the Steelers in the divisional or AFC championship game, they're going to lose one of those two games. I don't think that they're making the Super Bowl. I think that as a team, especially with the way that the Patriots are looking at their offensive line, their run game can get easily stopped. And if someone brings pressure on Tom Brady and forces him to have to move around in the pocket and take away his quick dump-off routes, it's going to be a problem. And I think that the Steelers are a team that can do it. I say that if the Patriots go 15-1 or 14-2 in the regular season and get the one seed, but then they also will get trounced by somebody in the playoffs. And it'll be like upsetting, like the way that the Jets beat them in the playoffs back in 2010 with people celebrating on their field. And I think that will be glorious to watch. But we got to move on. We're doing pretty good with the show. We're 40 minutes in.
Yeah, we're doing great today.
Yeah, we're flowing right through it. I'm going to bring up something that we talked about many times on both on shows and in person. Now, Danny, you went after my boy with some of your articles, and my boy's name is Carnell Lake. I have several boys, but he's one of my boys. Growing up as a kid, Carnell Lake was that hard-hitting, fast-moving, making interception playing safety for the Steelers in the 90s. That I was like, man, that's the kind of safety that I want to see, all this stuff. And I didn't understand all the football, but I just knew that man was really, really good. And years ago, when they signed him to be the secondary coach, I'm like, this is perfect. He can teach these guys, and it'll certainly be rocky because the Steelers secondary lacks, the super talented draft picks. But I think he can get him there. And you were telling me earlier this season on this show that Carnell Lake wasn't getting the job done, that the secondary's coaching was the problem. And when we met in Pittsburgh, we were saying the same thing. But now the secondary, I think they significantly improved. Ross Cockrell is playing very consistent on the outside. Antoine Blake isn't the best corner in the world,
but he's hitting hard. He's making people have to make plays, and he's knocking the ball out their hands. And when they do catch it, he puts them down. And then there's still, I think, the secondary best player and potentially even a Pro Bowl candidate, Mike Mitchell, is bringing pain in the secondary, hitting people everywhere, making clutch interceptions, making key pass deflections in the red zone. I've been really happy with seeing the secondary play with the players that it has. Do you think that the secondary has been improving? And do you still think that Carl Lake is not a good secondary coach?
Yeah, I mean, I do remember complaining about Carnell Lake. I remember also meeting up with you in Pittsburgh, and I complained to my husband after we met. I was like, man, that Chris Carter, he's so wrong all the time. Because we sat there, and the whole time it was like, oh, you were like, oh, I love Carnell Lake. Carnell Lake is the best coach that ever happened. He's my man. He's perfect. I love Carnell Lake. And I'm just like, you know, you're wrong. But I have to say, one of my biggest surprises of the season is the way the secondary's performed, because I believe I haven't gone back and done an analysis of it, but I think that a lot of my articles in the off season and preseason were expressing concern about the secondary. Like, wow, what are we going to do? Especially once it was clear that, you know, Cinquez Golson wasn't going to be able to play. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, whoa. And Mike Mitchell, he said, yeah, I was playing through pain during the season, and then he admitted later that he also didn't know the playbook very well, and I'm thinking, what kind of drag is this that we have on our team? I have to say, I'm not going to say the W-R-O-N-G word, but I have to say, I'm just going to ignore your question about Carnell Lake and just say I'm really impressed with the way the secondary's played. I think Mike Mitchell, with a healthy groin, I think my new nickname for him, Mike Healthy Groin Mitchell, makes the BB gun nickname for Dalton seem really good. But Mr. Healthy Groin is really a monster. He's a beast. I am so happy he is in our secondary. I've gotten over the fact that Brandon Boykin isn't on the field. I think that Antoine Blake is, I mean, he it's been a while since he had a horrible game. I mean, he's been playing well. I think as a unit, they're looking more coordinated. And I don't know if that's to Carnell Lake's credit or if it's Antoine Blake's, you know, in addition to being a prophet, maybe he's got, like, some super good karma. So I'm going to completely dodge your question on Carnell Lake and just say I'm really pleased with how the secondary is performing.
Yeah, and I understand. I do that only just because, you know, we like to have fun on this show. But at the same time, I've been looking at this secondary saying, like, there is a sign here that they're trying to have a system that can actually work with whoever you put on the field. For example, look at when the Steelers lost Will Allen against the Rams. It was troublesome. You know, we were like, uh-oh, that's a problem. And, you know, the Steelers were already low on safety depth. And it looked like, you know, will the Steelers have to go get somebody to add to this secondary, which already looked to be struggling. And Robert Golden filled in perfectly. He was not amazing by any means, but he did his job. He was in there. He was making coverage. He was in the run support. He never looked to be out of position. In all my film room studies, rarely did I ever look and say, man, Robert Golden should have been here and he wasn't, not killing us. You know, I don't even think I remember saying that once. And I think that part of that is because this team, whether it's Keith Butler or Carnell Lake or Joey Porter or Jerry Osowski, somebody, they know what they're doing out there. And they look a lot more coordinated than they did against the Patriots in week one, I say that they didn't even do that horrible of a job containing the Patriots. So I'm pretty excited. About to see where the secondary goes. Also, you got to think, you know, with this draft pick, do the Steelers go after another cornerback? Do they try to add to their depth at safety? Or, you know, are they going to keep trying to build the front seven, which I wouldn't be against? And, I understand we got lots of first-round draft picks on linebackers and defensive linemen, but to me, I'm all about getting hit on the quarterback and containing the run and building the secondary. Unless you see a guy that is Troy Polamalu that is going to be elite for us and you're pretty sure about that, then I'm not even worried about drafting the secondary unless it's a surefire hit. But on the front seven, I want bangers. I want people that Bud Dupree, who has really, really impressed me this season and done a great job so far, both with his technique, his explosiveness, he's using his size, he's doing everything. But speaking on Mike Mitchell, Andrew Kipp and I have been working on a film room study session that's going to turn into a sort of feature on how Mike Mitchell has just been a complete beast recently. And we take three plays from this past week, and we're going to break them down, show you what he did right and what is so impressive about this guy. He is a grown man out there, Danny. I mean, the hits that he lays on people, the coverage, he doesn't just run with you initially. But one thing that you saw against Johnny Manziel, what he loves to do, he likes to play sandlot football, run around, scramble around, hope for somebody to get open, and then hit him with a strike there. Mike Mitchell flowed around with players for several seconds that kept the, you know, on plays that are tough to follow around. You know, with NFL playmakers, it's tough to follow that kind of speed and quickness all the time. Now, Mike Mitchell was able to jump all over those kind of plays and make those kind of things happen. So, personally, I'm super excited about him, but I think also part of it is Carnell Lake and definitely Keith Butler has a system that they're working that is improving with every passing week.
They're looking better. There's no doubt about it. I think, again, that's been one of the best parts of the season for me.
And to what you said about Boykin, you said exactly what Carnell Lake said. They want to get him out there, but there's just no place for him. You know, his place is a slot corner, and William Gay's been a really good slot corner for us. Antoine Blake and Ross Cockrell have not performed completely inept, of their skills on the outside, and the Steelers don't feel like they really need him right now. So, you know, I think that's a good thing because that means that's another guy we have in depth in the background in case someone gets hurt, which seems to happen with us a lot. So, so that's the Steelers secondary. Moving forward, we're going to do some predictions before we end our show. First game, we're gonna go through reverse order that I gave you earlier. This to me is a really big game because both teams are in polar opposites where they're going. The Broncos at the Bears. The Broncos are on a two-game losing streak, losing to the Colts, and then losing this past week. Oh, sorry, who did they lose to? They lost to somebody. I can't remember right now. It's on my tongue, but they lost to. They're on a two-game losing streak. They're really struggling. They lost to the Chiefs. That's right. And then at the same time, the Bears are on a win streak. They're 4-5. They're trying to chase down the Packers and the Vikings at the top of the NFC North. Who do you got winning this game and why?
I got the Bears. Bears won. Well, the Chargers kind of suck, but they beat the Chargers. They crushed the Rams. I think they're on a roll. I think they're playing better. I think Fox has been an astounding coach for them, so I'm going to have to go with the Bears just based on momentum.
I agree with you there. I think the Bears are tough. And my man Jeremy Langford, who I really wanted the Steelers to draft, he was Le'Veon Bell's backup at Michigan State, and he seemed like a really good, solid pick. He's a rookie right now, and he's wrecking it for them in the absence of Matt Forte, who, you know, was a great fantasy pickup for me in some leagues, but has completely fallen off the map since. But Jeremy Langford is a bad dude. Jay Cutler's playing outside of himself right now, and the Bears' defense looks to be very competent under John Fox. He seems to turn the organization around, whereas I just don't have any faith in a guy named Brock Osweiler right now. He's going to have to show me something. So I'm with you that we both picking the Bears. Now, the next game is one of your favorite teams to talk about. It's the Bills at the Patriots, a.k.a. the Cheetahs. So who you got in this game? Rex Ryan's going to New England. They lost by 8 points last time. You know, it was pretty close, but now that they're more healthy, LeSean McCoy looks good, Sammy Watkins looks good, Tyler Taylor's back. You know, Ken and the Patriots are reeling with the loss of Julian Edelman. Do the Bills overtake the Patriots, or is this just going to be another Patriots just beating down the Bills because they've done that for 20 years now?
Okay, so like 15 minutes ago, I said the only team that was going to beat the Patriots was the Texans, which in hindsight seems a little absurd that I said that. So I'm going to go with the Bills. I just can't help it. Every week I think, wow, it's the Patriots' week to lose. So I'm going to go with the Bills over the Patriots in Foxborough. They're going to humiliate them. Rex Ryan's going to be super happy. He's going to have a really outrageous press conference afterwards, and it's going to make for a lot of good sports writing and social media tweets and such. So I'm going with the Bills. I mean, as you can tell from my tone of voice, I don't know that I'm sold on that, but I am going to go with the Bills.
I hear you. I'm sticking with the Patriots just because I don't think that the Bills are just there quite yet. I think they had a solid win last week. They've been playing good. They beat the Jets on Thursday Night Football. The week before that, they beat the Dolphins, and Tyrod Taylor looked to be back into an improving form. I also think Tyrod Taylor is a player that people should really look at as a rising quarterback. I wouldn't put him in the elite category, even the close to elite category, but I would put him in the category of like where I put Colin Kaepernick when he was coming up in the league, saying like this guy has potential. Let's see where he goes, and you know, if he can get his team, you know, on the right path. Now, I do think that the Patriots are in trouble. I do think the loss of Julian Edelman will hurt Tom Brady as much as people say he doesn't need receivers because he just makes receivers. I think that's pretty much a myth. People don't give credit to Troy Brown for how great of a player he was across the board, as well as players like, you know, oh, I don't know, Randy Moss and Wes Welker, who they make fun of, but he was a key part of that offense. And this guy, Rob Gronkowski, I think Julian Edelman is a really good receiver. You know, he's had weapons throughout his career, and I do think that people, they underestimate the talent that he's had. And I think that when we see him without Edelman, let's see how he does with Brandon LaFell, who I do think is a really good athlete. He just has to put it all together with his hands, and I think that he could be a threat in the NFL, a consistent threat. You know, but can he win with just Gronkowski and LeGarrette Blount and Brandon LaFell? You know, those are going to be questions. He has Danny Amendola. I think that down the line, that's going to come back to hurt him. But as far as the Bills, the Patriots, I still got the Patriots just because Rex Ryan, I think his ego gets in his own way sometimes. Now, the big game that I think all Steelers fans will be watching, the Sunday night game, is going to be the Bengals at the Cardinals. Now, the Cardinals, they're 7-2, but there was something that's been brought up with them this week. They have not beaten a team with a winning record. In fact, the only team with a winning record that they faced this season was the Steelers with Landry Jones, and Landry Jones beat them. It was also Michael Vick and Landry Jones. That's another story. Meanwhile, the Bengals, they just lost to the Texans. Who do you got winning this game?
I'm sticking with the Cardinals on this one. I think they're the better team. I also think the Bengals will be shaken from their humiliating loss to the Texans, and they will not rebound because they just don't. That's not what they do.
I hear you, and I'm with you. The Cardinals, I think, are the team to win right now. The way that they beat Seattle in Seattle, to me, was impressive. And though Seattle does not have a winning record, I still say that's an impressive win on the year because going into Seattle like that, in front of everybody, it was a big win. Carson Palmer looks really good, and we'll see how good this Bengals defense is when they go up against a healthy Cardinals team right now. I think Larry Fitzgerald's going to put up the numbers from University of Pittsburgh, I also think that the Bengals offense is going to struggle, and the Cardinals have a playmaking sort of defense. They're not shut you down defense, but they have similarities in the way that the Steelers play is that right now, if they hit you hard, if you make a mistake, they will jump on you, and they can take it back to the house. I see that Andy Dalton commits some serious turnovers, and that at the end of the week, everyone's going to be talking about, oh, Andy Dalton this and Andy Dalton that. He's not as good. Boomer Esiason is going to be boo-hooing on his pre-talk show this week because he can't praise his Bengals like he has been all season. So I'm with you. So just recapping our picks, we both picked the Bears to beat the Broncos. We both picked the Cardinals to beat the Bengals. And you picked the Bills, and I picked the Patriots. So those are our picks for this week. We'll be able to come back to it next week because we are about out of time for our show. And I think we had a good show today. Thanks, Danny. You were a great partner today. You didn't call me wrong too many times this week. It didn't have to go to that level. But Danny, what have you got to say to our listeners coming back for what they should be looking for this week and things that we got going on at Behind the Steel Curtain?
I usually just say go Steelers, but the Steelers aren't playing this week. So I think this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday and Monday night, are great days to, A, scout out some potential draft picks for various teams out of the NCAA on Saturday, and – just scope out, especially that Bengals game Sunday night. That's going to say a lot about the AFC North. The Bengals will have to help us by losing, but I think it is a possibility, and it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And I think of all the weeks, I don't even know how to say this, but Thursday night was the worst game. The Jaguars and Titans was so bad. That Sunday's games are going to make up for it. I mean, the NFL gods have a lot to do to make things better after that horror show last night, especially with those disgusting color rush uniforms. But I think we should give the universe a chance to make up for it. And even though the Steelers aren't playing, I think there's enough entertaining football out there on Sunday. Also, football of consequence in terms of the AFC North standing. So my advice is, just sit in front of the TV as usual and keep tabs on those games.
Man, you tell me, Danny, that you were not a fan of the Jacksonville Jaguars spicy brown mustard color looking uniform. I thought those were hot.
No, I didn't like the Titans uniforms either. The Titans uniforms were like, hey, we're having a baby shower, and we don't want to have to change at halftime, and it's a boy. And I don't know who had a boy or who's pregnant with a boy, but they definitely look like they were going to a baby shower. And the Jaguars look like they were babysitting, like, 500 babies with, like, projectile diarrhea.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
That's actually very disgusting.
It was disgusting. It was horrible. It was, like, gross. I don't like babies. And for somebody with six kids, that's hard to admit. But I feel like between the baby shower blue and the baby diarrhea, whatever that color was supposed to be, it was actually hard to watch last night, even if the teams had been playing really well.
And then also, I thought it was hilarious watching the Christmas colors of the game the week before with the all red Bills and the all green Jets. And it said colorblind people couldn't tell who was who. And I'm sorry, when I was looking at it, I was like, this is hysterical.
It was horrible. Awful.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, so, thanks, Danny. And this has been a great show. Thank you for listening, whether you're listening live right now or with us on iTunes. Where you can find all of our shows behind the steel curtain by searching The Standard Is The Standard, because that's our flagship show on our website. But we're about out of time. It's about to be 1 p.m. on the East Coast. It's about to be 11 a.m. in Danny's time in Colorado. But
thanks for including me, because that was offensive when you were like, hey, good afternoon, when actually it was morning here. I really felt like I just didn't even matter or exist as a person, or that Colorado isn't even a real state, or that time zones don't exist. So thanks for making that right. Appreciate it.
Hey, I'm going off Donald Trump. I don't care about your lifestyle. You're different from me, so therefore I don't like you. So thank you for listening to everywhere. Check out Behind the Steel Curtain this weekend. I know it's a bye week, people, but we got some really good film studies coming up. We got some really good articles from great writers such as Danny, such as Jeff, such as Andrew. We even got some new writers that are coming in right now. We're going to be doing a series on the cover, too, and the evolution of it this season with the Steelers. So the good, the bad, and the ugly, you'll see it all on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com both this weekend and next week leading up to the Seattle Seahawks. So this is your host, with Christopher Carter, with Danny Bostic, signing off. Thank you, everyone, and go Steelers.
Go Steelers.